This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
Here I am joined here with Adam Papagon. He's a candidate for governor in the recall election. Adam, great having you on the show, and I'm also joined here with Matt Pegas.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to be here.
So before we get to the campaign, do you want to give us some background information about yourself? Your background is you're an LA tour guide, musician, museum curator, and TV producer, and to go from there, and then like what inspired you to get involved with politics from the entertainment background?
Yeah, well, I think the through line with all of those things is popular culture, and you know, I'm from LA. This is clown town. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. And you have a unique opportunity in Los Angeles to, you know, if you're a fan of TV, movies, the news, whatever, you can actually interact with them if you can insert yourself into the narrative. And you can see these places you've seen on TV, and you can meet these people and stuff like that. So, I've always just been interested in, you know, culture in general. And when this opportunity of a recall election came up, because I remember the other recall election in 2003. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah, with Gray Davis, I think. Yeah, I was in high school when that happened.
Yeah, it was great. Angeline, Mary Carey, Gallagher, Gary Coleman, the singer from TSOL, like a lot of like random people ran. And I thought it was awesome, but I was too young to run for office at the time. So, you know, you don't get a second chance in life too often. So when this came along, I don't know, it just seemed organic and it was on the timeline.
Yeah, they do seem like recalls. I think we're going to have a second gubernatorial election, but like a generic one in 2022.
But yeah, there's one anyway. Yeah, 2022.
Regardless, but they are like recalls. I mean, yeah, they are good for democracy in a sense, but they give, because they give like more less known candidates more of a chance than a generic election.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, in a regular election, I wouldn't run. There's no point. This with the recall, it's just it's scandalous. It's gossipy. You know, all the things that the West Coast media loves. So it just seems like a fun thing to do.
As far as while you're running, do you have any like major critique of Newsom, Governor Newsom, as far as being out of touch from the citizens, or is this more? Are you just more focused on your own campaign, or how critical have you been of Newsom?
Well, I mean, look, he's like a politician, supervillain with slick backed hair who's, you know, never really worked a day in his life other than these jobs that were handed to him because he comes from a powerful family. So in that respect,
if you're talking about TV, I think I've heard him compared to the character in that show Arrested Development. I forget the brother of the main character. I forget the actor's name.
Job.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a little Joby. Yeah. He reminds me of the Green Goblin, actually, if you're a Spider-Man fan. He just looks like Peter Parker's roommate's father, who's the millionaire industrialist.
Oh, you mean Willem Dafoe? Oh.
Yes, Willem Dafoe. But not Willem Dafoe, the Green Goblin.
Gotcha.
The supervillain, actually.
Yes, that he's a little bit more attractive than the Green Goblin, but I will say, my association, I don't think I'm alone in this, from the first time I heard of Newsom, and around, I moved to California in 2017, voted my first time here in 2018, so I wasn't really familiar with him. But I saw him as the Democratic and the general front runner, and I immediately thought Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. I think
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I heard that too, yeah.
Which is now a more standard. I kind of took a shot with that, and I've noticed in recent months that others share that perception. I mean, as you said, it's not just Willem Dafoe, but the Green Goblin. I mean, it's not just that he looks vaguely like, what's that actor's name in the movie? Christian Bale. It's not that he just looks a little bit like Christian Bale, but actually he embodies that sort of yuppie, that whole yuppie thing. Not that I think he has a basement full of dead women, but stranger things would have happened than that. I mean,
yeah,
there's a certain slickness about him.
Yeah, I mean, he's so, in that respect, I mean, I dislike him just like I dislike any politician, because you have to have some sort of personality disorder to go into this, to want to do this. Because, I mean, I'm running, you know, kind of as a joke, I'll be honest with you. But, like, just the hate I'm getting from strangers, just, like, people are so into politics, they're so wrapped up, and so just to, like, get that hate on a daily basis
from
strangers.
Or also it's because the recall, just, I think some people who are, like, hyper-partisan Democrats assume if you're running against Newsom, you're, like, a right-wing Trump supporter, and they don't really... It's kind of narrow-minded, yeah. But it's a partisan mentality.
Well, look, if he's such a great governor, he'll survive the recall. What can I say? That's politics. Yeah. He knew what he was getting into when he signed up for this. So, like, I don't... You know, I wouldn't like him... I wouldn't like any politician, no matter what, and I think all politicians are out of touch, because most of them are rich, and rich people are out of touch with the working class. That's just the way it is. So, yeah, in terms of, like, if I would have done things better during the pandemic, or what would I have done different, it doesn't matter. It's a hypothetical question. Maybe I would have done something better. Maybe I would have done something worse. No one knows. It happens. It's over. We're here in the recall situation now. So, you know, let's all have a little fun and learn about the political process.
Yeah, like, all these people, they run for some kind of pet project, like a wedge issue, or for publicity. What would you say is the main reason you're running is just kind of, it's publicity. You're running as a declined estate, not with any political party.
Oh, absolutely. I would never want to align my, all of the political parties are right-wing, except for maybe the Green Party, but they're all pretty conservative, and not progressive, what I would call progressive enough, because, and you know, the Democratic Party could talk a big game or whatever. Where's the change? These people have been in power in California for decades. Like, what, like, we still have all the same problems that every other state has, and other problems. So I don't really see much of a difference between Democrat, Republican, whatever. I see the ruling class and the rest of us.
Oh, yeah, and as far as, like, what the issues you're running on, like, the main issues in California is the cost of living, wildfires, yes. Homelessness, yes. And how the economic situation has been impacted by the pandemic. What would you say are the top issues that you're running on or you feel passionately about?
Well, okay, the wildfires get worse every year, and that's something that affects every California, and we're on track for the wildfires causing more pollution than industry or cars or anything else in California. So all of these, you know, paper straws and all this stuff we're doing that's not really making a dent, it doesn't matter because the state is on fire 6 months out of the year. Hey, you think you're tired of wearing a mask this past year and a half in the pandemic? I can easily foresee a time in California not too far off where there's just so much ash in the air that when you're outside, you have to wear a mask anyway just to keep from coughing up soot. So we need to do something about the wildfires. I don't know if it's controlled burn. I don't know if it's more access to water. I'm not a fire expert. If I was governor, I would definitely find somebody who was an expert on wildfires, and I would say, what's it going to cost to make this no longer an issue? And we just need to spend this money now. Otherwise, this is going to plague California for decades. And as the planet gets warmer, this is just going to keep happening more. And so the wildfires, I think, is something that no one's going to be pro wildfire. It's just, this is an issue of inaction and inaction for decades and having a problem build up, compounded with global warming, of course. And then, you know, the cost of living here is outrageous because there's, I think, not enough housing. People are like, where are you going to build this, you know, housing, whatever. Like, every building in Southern California is two stories max, pretty much. Like, why can't we build denser buildings? People just don't want to do it. And that, I think, is the problem. And the longer you ignore a problem, it doesn't go away. It just gets worse.
So you think a big part of it is, like, you've talked about the empty, like a lot of these empty shopping malls that's part of it, though, because those could be empty office space, could be transformed into housing, but you think a lot of it is just the zoning in California, where LA is actually unique in that sense, where most of LA actually is like one- and two-story buildings.
Yeah, which is how the city developed, and that's the character of our city, and, you know, it's romantic, whatever, blah, 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 blah. That's the past. That's done. We're now in a situation where there's literally slums on every major street, and these aren't people, oh, homeless people, they're all drug addicts. They don't want to work hard. There's not good jobs available that could just put you in a one-bedroom apartment. I have a friend who's, he's about 50, so he's older than me, and he said, you know how you know things are getting worse in L.A.? When I was your age, you could live in a one-bedroom apartment. Nowadays, no one can afford a one-bedroom apartment. And he's totally right. It's like it's we're all being squeezed. Meanwhile, Jeff Bezos owns the most expensive house in the country, $150 million in Beverly Hills. Like that, it just doesn't – it's not right, and we need to do something about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd say primarily funding – raising the threat funds through taxing billionaires – and then how do you deal with like the kind of loopholes? Like, what if a corporation or billionaire decides to change their residency to another state? Like, are there ways to get around those loopholes and to still have access to those funds?
There has to be, A. B, I'd like to see these billionaires move to Texas the last 6 months. They're not going to like it. Everyone wants to live in California. California is the best. And we already have a high tax burden here, and that's not driving people away. And I'm not talking about, you know, using our current tax laws. Like, the billionaires have all the money. The house that you don't own, the family you can't afford, the kids you can't afford to raise, you know, the healthy food you want on your table. That's all because billionaires have all the money. It needs to be redistributed. I know I sound like a socialist, but billionaires are very good at making money. And if we take some of their money and use it for, you know, the rest of us, I have no doubt they'll be able to rebound and make their billions back. So everybody wins.
So you are a small business owner. What do you
Yep.
What are your thoughts on the impacts of the economic situation on small businesses and independent contractors? Do you think the issue is the need for more financial support, and are there specific regulations that make it difficult to be a small business owner or an independent contractor? Another gubernatorial candidate I had on was talking about a specific law, I forget which one, but what are your thoughts on the economic and political climate for small business owners in general?
So I had, because of being a tour guide, I had to get the commercial insurance, I had to incorporate, it was the whole thing. I never expected to be a small business owner. I've always done gigs. I've always, you know, picked up work where I could get it. Once I did start learning about how a business works and all the breaks you get as a business owner, tax write-offs and a lower, you know, the income you make. Like, for example, if I have to do an independent contractor thing, I can do it with my EIN number, my employer identification number. And then so any income I would be making as an independent contractor is income to the company, and it's taxed at a much lower rate. So I think people need to know about these breaks that businesses get, and more people should be small business owners. It's people who work wage jobs, hourly jobs. They're the ones getting screwed. So I actually think it's the opposite. I don't think we should close these things for small businesses. I think everybody should be able to do what a business can do.
And then you also have the background in entertainment. And then there's a whole issue of funding for the arts and giving more opportunities to creative endeavors, including arts and independent filmmakers. With that, do you have thoughts on like the economic mechanisms of the entertainment industry? And do you see political reform as the issue of creating more opportunities for the arts?
No, actually. I think art, you know, art's part of all the human experience. Every culture, every human that's ever lived on this planet has had some experience interacting or creating art. So art is going to go on, and people do it. Art shouldn't be done for financial gain, right? I mean, you should be doing it because you have something to say. You have a statement you're making. So art will figure itself out. And, you know, the old models of the entertainment industry, you know, these big blockbuster movies. What happened last year when Hollywood found out they couldn't have like $1 billion opening weekend with, you know, Avengers 6 or whatever? They abandoned us. They stopped making movies. They get these Netflix made-for-TV movie low, you know, low-budget things. And it's like, it's not relevant to people anymore. This Oscar thing was like, I think, the lowest viewed ever. Nobody saw any of these movies, and nobody, who cares? Like, I've seen a million movies. They're all the same. Like, TikTok is a million times better. I still love TV, but TikTok is great. Anybody can do it. And like, I think we're at the point just with technology, anybody has the ability to make themselves famous. So giving an industry that has so many gatekeepers, that's so monolithic, that gives so few opportunities to people, unless you're somebody's kid or you have some connection or whatever. No, cry me a river. They've done just fine over the last 100+ years. They'll bounce back, or they'll figure out something new. So art is art. Politics should be about, you know, just making sure people aren't dying on the street, making sure people aren't wondering where their next meal is coming from, making sure that the planet doesn't keep getting hotter and hotter. Like, just like stuff that people aren't going to do out of the goodness of their heart. That's what the government should be there for. Stuff that we collectively need to put together, you know, energy systems, transportation, things that only a coalition could do.
Yeah. My questions are a little bit general. You probably already addressed them, but So you don't really necessarily identify as coming from the left wing. You identify with a more sort of radical centrist or beyond the box sort of positioning?
Maybe. I don't know. What's so radical about not wanting there to be homeless people anymore? That's the part of it I don't understand. And also,
not one with extreme views, but rather a type of centrist who is not simply in between being a Republican and a Democrat, but rather someone, out of the box. I mean, radical in the sense of out of the box, not radical.
Yes.
Extreme. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I want to be out of the box because the system that we have is not working. Like, last year we saw culminating with what happened on January 6th in Washington, D.C., the whole system just almost ended. Like, it's severely broken. And so it's not working for a lot of people. Maybe it worked in the past for some people, but I don't think there's ever been a time in at least a recent American history where the system has not worked for so many different types of people.
Well, I think I agree with you there. They have different ideas about why it's not working.
Yeah.
But I think the best and most honest way to look at the current political scene and to look at the events of January 6th, rather than the hand-wringing media way, is to recognize how much of it is a sign that something is fundamentally broken in the system. That
absolutely
isn't, you know, that isn't necessarily, in my opinion, not, and I'm sure in Robert's opinion as well, not what the kind of liberal end of the media would push as the, you know, the brokenness of America's racism or whatever, but rather something more fundamentally just not working on a day-to-day level for millions.
It's not working for a lot of different types of people, and everyone's angry at each other and everyone's pointing fingers, and it's just like, enough is enough. Like, if everybody had money, everybody'd be happy. Like, I think, I don't know. Maybe I'm a simpleton, maybe I'm a dreamer, whatever, but it seems like these big problems that, you know, plague society for decades and decades that seem so unsolvable, what if they were actually easy to fix? If you took away the partisanness and the culture war and all that, and if we could just get on the same page about a couple of issues and start with those, maybe everything would get better. I don't know.
And I know you kind of addressed this at the beginning of the show as well, but you've mentioned that you're kind of running to sort of as a statement, and that you remember the last recall and all that. But it sounds like this is something on another level that you are invested in, which is great. Have politics been a long-standing interest? I mean, maybe Robert has questions about this that we can get to later, but I'm curious if how often have you thought about running for governor in the past, or is this kind of a whim?
It was totally a whim. I've always been interested in politics and current events as entertainment, because, you know, tomorrow's history is today's news. Like, to actually... one of the tours I do, the O.J. Simpson tour, I'm, you know, probably one of the experts on the O.J. trial.
Oh, yeah, O.J. is, it's weird as how he's become, on Twitter, he's, like, become a political pundit now.
Yeah, right? But we remember how it started, and so, you know, you can take your own experience, and then, wow, look how, you know, it's changed 25 years later. How is history going to remember this? How is this going to be viewed? So, like, I want to be on the front lines of history, and I want to be shaping it. And, you know, government, it shouldn't be a prerequisite that you have to be a millionaire to be governor. That's just how they've kind of decided how it should be. But, I mean, I think, and this is going to sound kind of nuts, but whatever. I think that the electoral process should be like more like an America's Got Talent kind of situation, where the government is providing a platform for all these people just to say all their weird stuff they want to do. And then maybe through that, everybody will be like, well, that guy's crazy, but he brings up a good point about the 1%. We shouldn't have it be so just a couple families and their suck-ups have all the money. That's not right. We didn't. That is not working for a lot of people, you know? I think that the government should be accessible, and so that's kind of why I'm doing it, and, like, to learn about the political process. I had never given a second thought about what it would take to run for governor beyond, oh, it's too hard, I don't have enough money, you can't do it. And then now I've found out you actually can do it.
I think it is.
So,
there
you go.
I think you do have to raise, like, $3,000 to $4,000.
It's $4,000, yeah. Thankfully, the federal government sent us all $3,500 last year, which I just stuck in the bank. So I'm already at my filing fee, pretty much, just in free money from the government.
Is increasing political literacy going to be part of your platform?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm doing social media. That's why I do podcasts and stuff. That's why I try to keep a conversational tone when I talk about stuff like this, not just hit talking points. Because, like, okay, the fact that the form that you have to send in to the Secretary of State to form a political committee, you have to print out off the internet. There's no online form or anything. This is a state, by the way, that's home to Google, Facebook, Apple, you know, the biggest technology companies in the world. You print it out, you have to mail it in, and then it comes back, if you do it wrong, with notes written in pen, and they have the wrong Secretary of State's name on the form because nobody updated the PDF. That's crazy. I can't think of a more clear example of government not working.
Or just
working,
how
so
using a government website, like, they're not at all user-friendly on a state or national level.
How hard is it to make a website? I use websites all day long, all sorts of websites. Remember hamsterdance.com from the early days of the internet? Like, that was a better website.
Oh, yeah.
Than what the government's working. And it's just, it's a product of cronyism, of awarding these no-bid contracts, of not really having any competition or any particular pressure to make it better, not really having any oversight, not really having somebody even, because, like, how many people are printing out this, you know, government committee form? You know, like, probably not that many. And so everyone's just like, well, it's somebody else's problem, they'll fix it or whatever. And then, like, multiply that across an entire bureaucracy that has to run the fifth biggest economy in the world and the, you know, most populous state, yada, 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 all this stuff. Everybody always says about California.
So have there been attempts to censor you on Wikipedia? And that's kind of taking into account how you have had coverage from major newspapers, including the New York Times and the LA Times. Is this sort of a way to suppress, to sort of attack candidates, to marginalize them for not being, like, among, like, the top five?
Well, I did notice that somebody has nominated my Wikipedia article, which has been up for 10 years, for deletion, so we'll see what happens for that. I'm pretty confident that it will stay, and if it does get deleted, I will be right back on Wikipedia someday. Don't worry, folks. I am notable. If you don't know me now, you will in the future, I promise. But, yeah, I thought that was kind of BS that, like how partisan things are. Just, like, let me do my thing and run for governor. Like, it's not hurting anybody. Like, just let everybody should run for governor, right? Like, this should be something that's accessible. So, yeah, that bugged me a little bit. But guess what? Now I have a new thing to talk about and a new experience. And I can share that story with other people. And if it bleeds, it leads, as they say. So, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It's all good.
Yeah. Have any of the major establishment news sources cover your campaign? I know, I think the LA Times did, but about your tours, but have they covered the campaign?
No, not the campaign yet. I'm waiting to send out a press release and launch the website until my forms get approved to start raising money to kind of offset some of the cost of all this. because you can only spend as an individual $2,000 on your campaign unless you form a political committee. Now, I turned in this paperwork 3 weeks ago, so I'm actually going to call the Secretary of State this week, see what the holdup is. Something tells me they are kind of delaying this paperwork as much as possible just to take momentum away from the recall. But no, I'm waiting for a big PR push until I can start raising the money, just because, you know, I could really use that $4,000. I know I said the government sent me $3,500, whatever, but like, this is kind of a lot of money to spend, you know, just on a whim. So I'm waiting for the thing, but yeah, I think I'll probably get some coverage, you know, who knows.
When is your campaign website going to be up, and that's going to have your platform?
It's built. I'm just waiting for the paperwork to open the designated bank account to link to the donation thing. It's like a whole process. But I don't know, if they don't get this figured out in the next couple of weeks, maybe I'll just launch the website.
Mm-hmm. So you're mostly promoting the campaign on social media, especially yeah. TikTok?
Yeah. Yeah, TikTok is fun, and I never used it before. It's for younger people than myself, I think, are the primary users. But it's a really pretty well-made app, and the editing stuff is really good, and they have a good algorithm to push you out to strangers. Get a lot of hate, you know, a lot of people calling me names and stuff like that. But yeah, I got a pretty thick skin.
But with YouTube, the algorithms, I remember, like, YouTube from 10 years ago, a lot of people were going viral pretty easily, but they've kind of changed the algorithms, so only, yeah. like, the major news sites and entertainment venues will get the most hits because of the algorithms.
Yeah, exactly. TikTok is new enough, I think, that it's there's still some opportunity there. And it's easier to interact with people, and YouTube is oversaturated, Twitter is oversaturated. You know, and I've been wanting to get into TikTok for a long time, so this gives me an opportunity to do that. But on my Instagram, you know, but I'm still working 7 days a week with the tour company. You know, I've got other projects that I'm doing. So this is sort of like something I'm kind of doing in my spare time almost. And the election's not till November, so it's a marathon, not a sprint. So, you know, I need to – what little bit I do have to say, I got to kind of parse it out.
Do you plan on running again in 2022 or just the recall?
No. No, just the recall. But if this goes well enough, maybe I will run for mayor of Los Angeles next year. That I actually think I could do. I actually might have a chance with that. Not a good chance, but I might have a more of a serious chance with that, just because I'm like the LA guy. I understand it, you know.
So you would describe yourself with the tours. Do you have a reputation as kind of like a local celebrity?
Well, we have our local celebrities, our celebrities here in Los Angeles.
Well, Angeline, I'd say she's a local yeah. celebrity.
Okay, well, I'm not at Angeline level yet, but she is my idol and hero. My whole life, I've always looked up to her. I love Angeline. So, not there yet, but I'm a character, I would say. I'm an LA character. And I know a lot of people. I've been around a while.
Oh, yeah, with LA Tours, how it got started and like what's unique about the tours from an LA perspective of a native. I think it's really like tourists, generally tourists take the tour, but I think some people who grew up in LA kind of associate it with more tourists. But the yeah. one, the Curb Your Enthusiasm tour, like that one would interest me the most. Yeah, I'm a fan of the show, but I do think it pretty much accurately captures the West Side from like a local's perspective, because a lot of TV shows, they just focus on the iconic landmarks from the perspective of a tourist. So yeah, that show, it's filmed, Curb Your Enthusiasm is filmed in LA in the Valley. That one interests me the most. If you want to plug that and plug your other tours on different reality TV shows, and then also the OJ tour and how you became a tour guide.
Yeah, well, I've always been just interested in pop culture, interested in history. I'm like a nerd, I guess you would say. Like, I just like, when I go down a rabbit hole of wanting to know about something, like, I'll find these weird facts, and then I save them in my brain, just hoping that someday somebody will want to hear one of these facts. I think it comes back to wanting attention and wanting people to listen to me, maybe because of, you know, things that happened in my childhood or whatever. But, you know, just wanting to feel important and valued, and like what I have to say is important to people. And so I grew up in Brentwood, so like,
I grew up in that area as well. I lived there from like 99 to about 2013.
Yeah. Okay. So you know the West Side, you know, whatever. That just like the OJ Trial was just always like a part of my life. So I started doing that tour, and then I got a gig as like a normal Hollywood tour guide, and it was a grind and it sucked. And, you know, I was getting paid hourly, which was not reflective at all with the money I was doing. And I was a wage theft situation. I wasn't getting paid overtime. That's something the government can look into, wage theft. That's a huge drain on hardworking people. But I was able to leverage it, and the guy ended up paying me what I wanted. So I started my own company. And then from there, you know, I couldn't put food on the table and cover expenses, only doing the OJ tour. So I started doing just general sightseeing, and then came the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills tour, and then the Curb Your Enthusiasm tour. So it kind of rounded it out. But to make a long story short, I sort of just fell into it. And I'm pretty good at it. And it pays okay, not enough long term to like own a house. I'm never going to own a house doing this, which is a goal of mine. So something's going to got to give at some point. But, you know, it's fun, and people like to hear what I have to say, and I'm pretty good at it. And, you know, for the time being, that's where we're at.
And I had you pick up the tourists for the O.J. Simpson tour in a 1994 Ford Bronco.
I'm sitting in it right now. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cool. So you actually curated an O.J. Simpson. It was a museum or art gallery.
Yeah. So that was actually a prank that took on a life of its own and became like a news story, or a news item, I should say, that weekend that we did it. So yeah, I mean, that was around the time that I remember in LA, they had the ice cream museum, and it was like, this is not a museum. These are just props to take a picture in front of. And, and ice cream is not important. It's just a food that everybody likes. Like there's nothing to say. There was no artifacts. There's nothing. So it was sort of just a play on like the concept of a museum. And as if you say something is
like very, 2010, hipster culture.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, oh, well, I mean, this is something that's actually historically significant that people think is a joke. We should get all the OJ merch from the 90s and like do an art show of it. And then people started coming out of the woodwork. And then what did it was he got granted parole as we were planning this thing. And the story just blew up. And the media they love OJ. They love the OJ trial. So they came knocking, and then like I actually like it felt like I like went into the TV. Like I like stepped into the TV and I was like a part of it for a second. And then you know, then it was over, whatever, everybody went their separate ways. I don't think we made any money off of it. A couple hundred bucks maybe. We didn't really even cover anything. But it was just a fun thing to do. But you know, I like to have fun with my projects, and if one of them can get into like into the news and they're covering it like it's a serious thing, like I don't know, it's just like I'm a prankster, I guess. I just love it. It makes it just tickles me.
This just struck me during this conversation. Have you ever thought about doing a somewhat more controversial than O.J. Simpson perhaps, but have you ever thought about doing a Charles Manson tour?
There are already several. A.
Really now? Okay.
B. It's a huge distance to cover around Southern California, so it's not. Just from a entertainment perspective, it would not be like a tight, snappy tour. See, there's like nothing positive about the Manson thing. It's just like all negative. And the people who are into Manson, who are the people, well, you know, actually, he never killed anybody. Like, you don't want to be in that crowd. That's not the hill you want to die on. And so, yeah, it's interesting. You know, I could take you up to Spawn Ranch. I could show you the Life Magazine cave. But that's not what I want to be known for. OJ, you know, it has the redemption story and the race in America aspect, and it's still a story that is evolving, and the celebrity culture aspect of it, and so many things. Charles Manson, it's just more of a the cat gets out of the bag and goes, you know, one, you know, just kind of a just like a crazy thing that happened.
Yeah, yeah, no, fair enough.
You're also a musician. Would you see, this is a collaboration with David Liebhardt. Would you describe
David Liebhardt.
Experimental music, and you also had a public access show, and the public access show, and then you had a role in a Tim and Eric's movie.
No, I wasn't in Tim and Eric's movie. I interned for them for about 6 months in 2008, long time ago. They didn't treat me too nice, but that's a different story. And then I worked with David Lieberhart, who I knew from Public Access TV. Public Access TV is probably the thing I've been doing the longest, actually, because it's like always there, and they'll put you on TV if you want to be on TV bad enough. You take two classes, and they'll put you on, and definitely that spirit of just like that DIY, like if you want to do something, go out and do it. That certainly inspired my new bid into politics of just like no one's going to just hand you something, or if they do hand you something, you're probably not going to be prepared for it, and it's going to be a big disaster. If you really want agency and you really want control over your life, you got to do it yourself.
We're at the end of the show. Adam, is there anything else you'd like to add about your media background or about your campaign? Any site you want to plug?
I want to encourage people to just be aware of things and think critically, and don't just blindly trust that because the media says one thing, or that because it's always been this way, everything has to stay that way. Like, you know, life, it's all about changing, and you got to roll with the punches. And if you do vote for me, I really appreciate it. It would actually personally mean a lot to me. You vote for Newsom, whatever, you're one of, you know, 100,000 people's fun, vote for him. Me, every single vote actually would make a difference.
Adam Papagon, great speaking with you, and check out his campaign for governor.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, great conversation, guys. Thanks.